Hey and welcome. This is Mark Edward Davis, and this is a presentation of DreamConnections.com. I've got to tell you, I'm very excited about tonight, and I think you're in for a treat, not just because I'm presenting something I like, but because of what this has already meant for guys who caught part one, and I know what we're on in terms of helping men accomplish their quest. And so here's what I'm going to talk about tonight. We're transitioning into 2015, and there's always this aspect at the new year when you reflect, and so you think about the past, think about the present, and you do your planning for your future. And so in this concept of past, present, future, I wanted to do it in a way to give you real things you can hold on to. So for the rest of your life, you can grab these as tools to focus and create the most compelling life possible. So after doing part one, and I hope you go back and listen to that, I created the sort of an updated title, overall title for the series called Power Planning for an Awesome Future, because that's really what we want. We want to just grab something where we know at any time we can go in and we get perspective on everything to really power plan for that awesome future we want to have. So part one, which I'll do an overview in just a second here, was on leveraging your past. Today is on being fully alive, and this is part of the past, present, future concept. So in the present, it's about how to live a fired up life today, and in perspective to the scope of both the past and where you're going. So very excited about this. Let me give you a little overview of last week so we can kick it off into tonight's material. First of all, the overview from last week, I called it Leveraging Your Past. And I did this as a way to take a positive look on it, and I had this theme to the presentation. It's about cashing in on the value of your experiences and the investments you've made in yourself. Whether you look at your past as, whether your exciting victories or the pains and all of that is just part of life, you have to look at those as investments, and there's a way to take those and leverage that into this awesome future. So what I did was I told stories from based on these three books. And I believe in storytelling. Jesus did it. It's the way to convey complete thoughts from one person to another. And so I told these books I'd read and kind of gave a summary and how I feel they fit into your life story. And the books were The Dream Giver by Bruce Wilkinson, Epic by John Eldridge, and Halftime by Bob Buford. And here's sort of the residing message from part one. First, our path is similar to most men in that we have been called to do something with our lives. And so in the story of the first book, we learn about a man's journey and the challenge and the help that comes to him at the right time and him finding his calling. And it was just some really unique aspects of that. The second book talked about the fact the reason we love epic adventures and movies and stories is because our life model is going to be patterned after many of those stories we love. That's why we resonate with them. It's going to include challenges, betrayals, setbacks, and then the ultimate victories. And that's why we love the victories so much. We relate to the hero, the regular guy who shows up, who wasn't planning, who didn't come there, as Arnold Schwarzenegger, but you're just the regular guy who stumbled in and who just had to rise at the right time because that's our story. And then finally, what I did was I took this analysis about strategically looking at taking a halftime break, like in a football game. You break away at halftime, you look at what happened in the first half, and at some point assess what you learned from it, the skills you've acquired, finding the true desires of your heart. What does all this mean? What have you learned that you really, really love and you want to do in order to plan for that great life that we are called to live? So now let's move into the present. I want to talk to you about an overview for what we're going to talk about tonight. It's very simple, 3 points. First one is, what does it look like to live a day fully alive? I mean, it's something where we want to do that. Let's face it, we all live in this moment. You don't have another moment. You have this one. The one in the past, you can't live in it. You can only live in this one. And we want to experience at a very high level. We want to experience the euphoric emotions of the day, the power challenges. We want to be taken on. We want to, crush it, as they say, the common buzz phrase today, we want to crush it. And so, well, first of all, break that down. What does that even look like? You have to know what it looks like before you can try to model it and reproduce it. Second thing is, what stands in our way from achieving that? Okay, now we know what it looks like. How have I been getting in my own way, and what things have stood in my way from having that as a part of my regular daily existence? And then finally, okay, what do we do? Let's make it happen. What do we have to? So that's it. 3-part presentation, and we're gonna be done. And with this though, you'll have a mindset to be able to create this for yourself on a regular basis. And it's something that'll serve you the rest of your life. So let's have some fun with this. First of all, what does it look like? Okay, well, I believe that you begin with the end in mind, literally. You know, let's take a look at the end. What would you love your eulogy to read? This is a great exercise, and you may have done this one time in your life before, or maybe you haven't, but think about it. At the end of your days, there's sometimes those movies that happen where supposedly, people thought a guy died, he was missing, and so he ends up showing up at his own funeral to hear what other people say about him. And those are great. I mean, it's just highly entertaining, to the thought of showing up and seeing who showed up at your funeral, what they would all say about you. And then, of course, to show up and you're still alive would just be, you know, kind of a fun, you know, I don't want to say a prank, but it'd be like, it would be fun to shock people that way, in a positive way. So they're going to talk about several things, so we're going to review them here. The things people talk about at eulogies are the things you did in life, the things you got accomplished. You know, I remember he did this, and, you know, he became one of the greatest known for this. Steve Jobs obviously was known for his accomplishments and how he affected all of our daily lives with the, you know, the tools that he created for us. You're going to talk about love and friendships. Obviously, the place is going to be attended by people who you had connections with, you had love friendships and friendships with, who show up there. They're going to talk about the experiences you shared together. It's like, I was out with Mark, and we did this, and it was just the greatest thing. And, you know, you guys, you know, I know you guys who've been on quest tours are going to remember that the rest of your life. You'll talk about and remember those adventures. The fact of wisdom. You know what? When I was at my worst place, this person was there for me, and they said the thing I needed, and it changed my life. There are little nuggets of wisdom you'll be able to drop on somebody. Those are the kinds of things spoken at a eulogy. And finally, the legacy. It's, you know, because he lived today, all of these things are going forward and making a big difference for so many people. And so out of these five things that are the most commonly spoken about things about a eulogy, let's break them down on how to create those in our own life. And it's funny that I'm going to talk about how to live in this moment, in today, and creating a fully alive day based on such a distant thing. But you'll see how it actually can make today the coolest day of your life if you throw in a little piece from each of these into your planning and what you do for your day. So being a fully alive day touches on each of these and brings that deep sense of satisfaction that today was a great day. Today was awesome. And why do people stop and they say, you know what, today was not, and it's a deep sense of satisfaction. This was a great day. Why? It's because you've touched on deeply on one or more of these five areas and really contributed to something meaningful in your life in this day. So as much as that's sort of the end game, it actually can make the present very cool and richly rewarding and satisfying. So let's get into this and have live fully alive. Let's go for it. Let's talk about these five areas. First of all, in the area of accomplishments. Accomplishments can start off with things that are obvious, career goals. And career goals, I don't limit that just to entrepreneurs, business owners. It can be anywhere along the line. And I want to tell you this because when I was self-employed employed and had a sales job, and I went to work every day, I had a sales manager I reported to, I looked at that and there were still things within there that I wanted to accomplish, I could get very excited about. And I created, you know, the environment for me to love my job and to, you know, set goals every month and have that challenge and excitement to hit those and break them and do it with a team of guys. And so I could create things in my career. But the other part of the career was I realized even if it's a normal job for you where, you know, you work for a department of government somewhere and you don't feel like your particular niche changes the world somehow, that's okay because there are so many other parts of your life. For times, I worked in desk jobs and I thought, you know what I'm doing right now, I want to do with excellence. Obviously, anything you do, because you'll be more attentive, you'll be more focused on anything you do with excellence. But what I want to do is focus on it because this is what pays my real life. My real life then is the other things I get to enjoy. And so maybe my career is that thing for right now in my period of life that finances these other great things in life. But either way, you should always be looking for markers, accomplishments, things to check the box to say, I crushed it on that. I crushed on that. And mostly in these goals, what you're looking for is, yes, there'll be some personal goals, but I really look for the things where I know I'm going to have other people tell me, dude, you crushed that. So put that in the back of your mind when you're setting your goals. Am I setting something where other people in my work environment, in my career, my place would say, dude, that was impressive. That was awesome. Next is your physical fitness. We had a guy in the tribe, I love him dearly, Matt, who went out during this last year and just said, you know, I'm going on my quest tour and I'm going to get in the best shape possible. And he was significantly overweight. And in the course of just a little over 12 months, he literally lost 90 pounds. And he came in there feeling like it was the greatest accomplishment. So, you know what? If every day, and I'm just talking, let's break this down to today. If you did something today where you didn't eat that sugary thing, you did get to the gym, and this is why a lot of guys say they got to go in the morning to the gym, because they say, you know what, if the rest of the day goes to crap and other people's agendas end up absorbing my time, I can at least say, I got this done. And so there's a sense of accomplishment and victory and feeling like, no matter what else happens, I did this. And it can give you that sense of being feeling fully alive today. So your career goals, your physical fitness goals, do something, you mark that, you check that box, do something where you feel like I crushed it today. And that's a gift you do to yourself. Philanthropy, and this can come in a number of ways. Philanthropy, obviously, you know, we run Abundance International, we do work for the orphans overseas, and we're very excited about that work, and I have big plans for expanding that and doing a lot of things for a lot of people. And so obviously it's richly rewarding and satisfying, and it attracts to us who created that, other people have a like vision. Well, you don't have to create a 501c3 nonprofit in order to be a contributor. A lot of guys, this is what they get out of their work with the church. And for years, my big contribution was just meeting once a week with 8 or 10 guys in a men's group and bringing up a topic and talking about it and then listening to them and helping them go through their life and solve big issues in their life. Philanthropy can be a way you give to a friend. It can be the way you contribute to your community, whether it's your church or anything else, or just being that friend in need. You know, a lot of times when I was part of the church and one of the, you know, the couples in the church just had a baby, we'd all take a sign-up sheet and bring meals every day. So at least for the first 2 weeks, you know, or maybe sometimes a month, she wouldn't even have to cook. We would all bring the dinner there. And that's part of that. In doing that, you, when you show up at that house and you bring that meal and you see the way they light up, man, you come home feeling like, wow, this today was fully alive. I feel very rich and fulfilled in what I did today and how I was a part of doing that. All right. So next, here's what I want to talk about. Creating measurements for progress and milestones for accomplishment because, and I say this because if any of you have studied management, you've heard this saying, and here it is, what gets measured is what gets done. And that applies to us as people, as individuals. What we sit down and measure, what we say, I'm trying to get to this number, we focus on the numbers. I was just playing a card game with a family last night over the holidays. And it was a new game to me. I hadn't seen it before. It's like everybody at the table has their own deck of cards and they're playing like a solitaire game. But in the middle of the pile is the you know, where the aces get stacked up. You go from ace, 2, 3 on up in each of the suits. So each of us are playing our solitaire game looking to put it into the top. But she said the game is over and the winner happens when you have this side set of 10 cards that you end up finding a home for, whether they go in the middle pot or somewhere on your solitaire stack. So the first time I played the game, I'm just trying to get rid of this set of cards, and I did. But I hadn't been focused on putting cards in the middle. And then what I found was, okay, yeah, the game's over, but I didn't win because it's not about getting rid of that 10. What I later found out, she didn't fully explain, God bless my daughter, was that the actual winners, how many had cards in the middle pile? And so immediately I just said, okay, you know what? So it doesn't even matter. Because if I've got 30 cards in the middle of the table, and even if I still had all 10 of my cards over here, I can still win. It really is about what goes in the middle. And the same thing, and so of course, you know, the next round I won big. My daughter made a comeback, and so by the end of 5 games, she did end up beating me by points. But I learned, and so I adjusted everything, because now I realize what had to get counted and what get measured, you know, contributed. And a lot of times we go through the exercises of life and things we do in the day, and we're thinking about, you know, we don't really think about, is this really taking me where I want to go? Is this really where the big payoff is? And so creating a system for yourself by measuring is essential. And I want to tell you what I did. I'll put up a link later, but I did a talk couple of years ago on New Year's again on goal setting. And in that, I told about a program I did right at the time when I met my wife that totally turned my life around. Before, you know, I got into all these things, I set up what I called an 85-day pact. 85 days is 12 weeks. And I set up a daily sheet that I had. It was just like an 8.5 by 11, but I had a Word document. And I created my own fill-in-the-blanks. It had to do in the areas of, obviously, there's a physical fitness element to it. There was a personal growth element to it. And there were some career objectives. But they were pushing me, and I knew it would be very difficult, and some of these things I might tend to slack off on if I didn't have some accountability. But I hated that phrase, accountability. So what I wanted to do was just simply create leverage on myself. So I asked five friends, and one of them, and these were people I really regarded their opinion, where I didn't want to let them down. I had the pastor of my church. One of them was my adult daughter. Another one was my partner in business, and these kind of things. So it's like, and I said, can I for just 12 weeks, every day, just send you an email? You don't have to respond to it. You know, if once in a while you can send me a word of encouragement, pat me on the back, that's great. But if you could just let me send you this, then I know it'll get it done. And so what I had to do at the end of every day is I had to fill out this form and I had to email it to these group of five people to say, here's what I did today. And at the bottom, I'd have a little summary of what I thought the day meant. And there was a couple of days out of those 12 weeks where I just bombed. I didn't get anything done I wanted to. Something big disrupted it. And I just said, you know, but I'll be back. And so because normally when we have a sickness, we get an injury, we just derail from our entire personal development program. And we just lose track. Because maybe a whole week will go by if you have an injury, you're really sick, these kind of things. But because I had to do this, I had to get back on the saddle as quickly as possible. And I was measuring things I knew would get me where I wanted to go. And that 12 weeks totally turned my life around and got me in a place of feeling fired up about myself, excited that I was keeping promises to myself and I was moving towards where I want to go. And that really fired me up. And that put me in a mindset of energy, a positive expression of things that really made myself attractive when I finally met my wife. So just remember that. Create measurements of what those mean to you in each of those three areas for accomplishments. Because what's going to get measured, what you're going to track for yourself, is what's going to get done. And you want to make sure what you're measuring is going to lead you where you want to go in life and what's going to mean something to you. Now, the next part is to reward yourself and celebrate your victories. Because there's a part of your psychology where if you stress yourself, you deny yourself, you put yourself under, you know, physical stress to accomplish something, and if you don't reward yourself, your subconscious is going to go, why am I doing this to myself? This is brutal, and you're going to emotionally try to fight quickly to get out of your own program. You have to create rewards for yourself, and whatever that means for you, to be excited about your victories and accomplishments and to celebrate those, because the other moniker we have in if you've studied business or management is this: what gets rewarded gets done. And the same thing, if you create a program for a sales team where you say, hey, whoever reaches this marker gets, you know, a free trip to Hawaii with their family, boom, all of a sudden, guess what's going to get done? Whatever's going to take to get me on that trip. And you have to realize if that works for teams and people that are managed, or even you in a work environment, how much more does it work? Can you do that for yourself? And it'll mean a lot. Next, let's talk about love and friendships. And love is obviously that romantic connection. It's the one we're all looking for. It's that person you wake up to every day. It's your intimate partner. It's your soulmate. It's the one that fires you up. And again, what we talk about at Dream Connections is finding that one that is going to you know, be that wind beneath your wings, where you're going to want to charge the hill for her, and she's going to be supportive of you and back you up. And visualizing your life with your future wife is very, very important. I'm going to talk next week why this is true, because if you completely, and I do this in my book, if you haven't read my book, you should. There's a lot of things I talk about there in terms of masculinity and femininity and cultural understandings and things that I don't talk about other places. Very important. And one of the things I did is I spent a chapter on really, why are you doing this? Asking the question. And I went through this explanation where when I asked myself that question, I did an exercise where I literally described a day in the life with this person I hadn't met yet. I'm imagining not just how beautiful she is, but I'm imagining what our energy is like, what our day looks like. And it became so vivid and real that it helped me when I did start dating and I finally met my wife, that I already knew in advance what it was going to feel like to be with her. In that, it gives you, and even if you haven't met her yet, if you're not in a current relationship, understanding what it's going to be like to feel, you know, the energy between you gives you the excitement for today. You know, we're talking about feeling fully alive today, knowing that that's going to be part of your future. And because you believe that's there for you, you will then do the next thing. You're going to take action steps towards that trip and becoming educated to win and all the rest of the action steps you need to do, because you understand that by taking these actions will lead to that vividly imagined life you're putting together. Now let's talk about friendships. I use the Jesus model here, and Jesus, as he traveled this earth in his ministry years, there was known to him, if you're familiar with, he had 12 disciples. And out of those, he had an inner core of three, Peter, James, and John. And out of those, one, John, was the one called the Beloved. And it says he was, you know, the friend of Jesus, or sometimes where it was just the two of them. And he was, it was funny, you know, listening to the description. John will never use his own name as saying this. He just says it was the disciple that Jesus loved, because he didn't want to elevate her and make a big deal out of it, but everybody really knew that there was just one really tight friend with Jesus. Outside of the 12, there was 125 that just followed him for 3 years. And you know, they weren't invited into the inner circle of 12, but they would pick a tent, and they'd, you know, when he was preached again, they were there to come out and go hear him, and they followed him. So there was 125 that followed him. So why do I use this number? Because it seems to work for us as human beings. And that, you know, you're going to have a very tight group of close interpersonal friends where you're willing to be vulnerable, tell your stories, ask, you know, process each other's life. It could be one intimate friend like I had with Steve Marks, or it could be two or three, but it's going to be small. And the part where you're going to be vulnerable to people, you really only want to risk to that small group, because you really can't trust everybody. You either have time or the attention or the energy or understanding, aside from just a small group. And this is a group where I hope these are men in your life. And I hope you really value the time with these guys. When I went through my journey, as you know from my book and other stories, Steve Marks and I would spend 3 days a week. He lived about 2 miles away. He'd come on over, we'd sit on the porch, have a shot, and smoke a cigar. And just really, what he would say, unpackage life. He'd say, "Mark, what's going on?" And I'd say this. And he goes, "Hey, let's get together and really unpackage that." And he'd want to dig to the layers and really find out what's ticking, what's underneath it. And I'd do the same for him, of course. Outside of that intimate circle, you may have that 12 or so that you're just in regular connection with. This is your fun circle. These are the people that you love. You know them well enough. You're totally close to these people. You have a great time with them. You have regular connection with them. This is your inner circle. Next, you're going to have that 125 or so that you interact with, whether it's at work, it's your church, it's associations you're with. It's that next outer ring where you're not regularly having barbecues with these people, but you see them on a somewhat regular basis in a month. And it's part of that larger social circle. So here's the deal. Every day, do something in one of these three groups. And even if you just come home and crash and you're alone, get on the phone with one of your top three, you know, your intimate friends, and just have a conversation. Because what I'm telling you is, come back to the theme for this talk. The theme for this talk is how to create today a day you live fully alive that's richly satisfying to you. And so in doing that, make a note. Touch one of these circles in this. Take a step towards your quest tour, towards that day when you're going to be with that person that you visualize, you know she's there, what it's going to be like to be with her. And then make sure you're in contact with, whether it's a close friend, your next circle, or a social event. Maybe you go to a midweek Bible study, a church event, or a social activity, or a bike race with 500 other people. Something to keep you connected, because as God said at the very beginning, it is not good that man live alone. And he didn't just mean that for finding a wife. It's just not good for us to be alone. You know, it's the Unabomber type that you hear the quote. It's like, you know, he was sort of a quiet man, kept to himself. Yeah, and he blows stuff up. So it's like, you don't want to be one of those. We're meant to interact with each other. We are social by nature. And It doesn't happen by accident. To live a fully alive day takes conscious effort and thought. You have to create it. But in doing so, it's fabulous. It's fantastic. It's the life you want. So you just have to be conscious of putting in these five pieces and lacing them into your day, and you'll feel that. Let's talk about adventures. Now, adventures are something where I just believe you need stories to tell. And part of my motivation on this is two things. One, I get tired of hearing people tell other people's stories. They never had any life of their own. Second thing is I get tired of hearing these, and forgive me if I'm offending anybody in the group here, but you know, when I grew up in high school, you can understand this was a while ago, and we still had a lot of people alive who were seniors in the 70s who were from World War II. And they would always tell their stories about their adventures in World War II. But I would hear these enough from this generation of people who were in their 60s and 70s that it made me think, in the 50 years since you were fighting this war, did you do nothing else that you could tell a story about? Was there no other adventure? And it reminded me of that Benjamin Franklin quote where he says, "The saddest thing is to see a man dead at 25, but not buried till 65. And this is exactly what he meant. He got somebody who is alive and was living and contributing in life, but just somehow they didn't anymore after 25. They got caught up in the ritual of life, just whatever came along. They just got caught up in paying the bills, and they just quit doing anything that would be counted as adventure. Nothing new, nothing exciting. So I want to talk a little bit about, like I said, about these senior guys. You have stories to tell that are your own and that are recent, not ancient history. You know, can you tell something you did at least within the last year that was fun and exciting? That would be, a great thing to share. So the other reason you need to be able to have adventures, you just need to be tested. We all need to be stretched. I remember that saying one time, people talking about the comfort zone. And in the 80s, there was a lot of these guru speakers who were talking about trying to get you out of your comfort zone. And he says, because the comfort zone just is a dead zone. You know, we're all looking for that place just to be comfortable so there's no pressure and stress in life anymore. But, it's like that is not life. Life is about being tested. In fact, to the point where he says you need to be pushing your own boundaries of growth so you're always feeling a little uncomfortable about something in your life, where it's going to a place of discomfort, where you're growing into an area you've never been before, or else you're not growing. If you're only doing the thing you're totally good at, you've always done all the time, you don't need to learn anything new, your brain, your muscles, everything else just starts to say, well, I guess I'm not needed anymore. Because, the reason we physically have to work out is because if our muscles aren't convinced that they need to be alive and functioning and pushing to help us out, they begin to atrophy. Same thing with your brain. They say the one thing to set off Alzheimer's are mental challenges. Keep yourself mentally sharp. Give yourself another challenge. And we need it. We need to be tested. And so there's a part of adventure, just it means I'm going to try something new I haven't done before. Like going on a quest tour. When you go on a quest tour, you're going, a lot of guys, I totally created this system for guys who've never been out of their country before. And so for them, the whole thing is new. It's like I haven't been out of my country. This is all new. This is kind of James Bond. And it's a little nerve-wracking. And they ask me, should I be nervous? Is that okay? Well, yeah, that's the stuff of life. You want to be on your edge. You want to be pushing things. You want to be fully alive. Theme for the day again. Wow, where did we hear that already? So I think it's a good thing. New experiences, scary experiences. Sometimes it's like, wow. Can you imagine? My first time, I went in domestic mode after getting married young in life, and I hadn't been out of the country since I was 18 years old, and here I am at 42, and my first trip out of the country, I'm going to go to the Amazon jungle and fish on the river there, where I only know about two or three of the guys in the group, and and I'm having to get shots for this thing, I'm having to go get, visa done for the country of Brazil. You go through customs there and they set you in a square you can't get out of. Why, they open your bag in front of you with two armed guards there and they go through your whole suitcase. This is all new to me. And not only that, everybody's telling me the scary stories. You know, careful when you go through the water. There's things that can crawl up you. And it's like, you're going, ah, right? But you know what? by the time I get to the end of that week and realized, you know, a lot of those fears got put aside, and I realized the experience I had, you know, with the local natives, you know, getting, I held a 6-foot alligator on the Amazon River, and I got a picture of me with that. You know, we fished, we caught piranhas, we're looking for these peacock bass, but that almost became boring. We were catching barracudas, and the adventure of this thing, scary as it was, changed my life forever. And some of us need that. And to be on the edge a little bit within, you know, reasonable parameters, I'm not telling anybody to do anything really crazy, you know, illegal or otherwise, but I mean, just be thinking about it. This is the stuff of life. It's the juice that puts you on edge. It, and then coming out the other side, Gary Smalley is a great teacher and writer on this. He's a counselor on the area of families. And one of the things he says is camping has got to be one of the best things you can do for your family, because there's always something that goes wrong and gives us stories to tell. There's the story about the bear who got into the food thing, and the water that came up into the camp, and we all got soaked, and we went down the White River rafting and thrown out of the boat, and we come back saying it was the best vacation of our lives. Logically, you can't look at that and say it was the best vacation of your life. You got thrown out of a boat. You freaking had the bear eat your food. You had all your stuff soaked. Why? Because in adventure, in heightened states of emotions, you know, we bond with each other and we create things that are sensational. They're adventures, they're stories we live to tell. And I'm telling you, if you don't think about it, that, you know, you have to plan those. You have to be willing to try something new, to be tested, to do something that's a little nerve-wracking for yourself, because that's what you end up talking about. And that's your story. We are the sum of our stories. This is the exciting stuff. You have to do something physically demanding once in a while. I remember Steve, again, was telling me the story where they got ready to go to hike to the top of Yosemite Valley. Half Dome has a day hike you can go up to. But this thing's up at 2,000 foot elevation. And the challenge of that, but to stand on the top of that canyon to look over Yosemite Valley and its majesty is breathtaking. And it is something you will remember for your lifetime. And or to do that, you know, 5K, 10K, the 100-mile bike ride, whatever the thing is for you, that's another great adventure. Try adding one new something into your life every month. And it can just be something in town you don't normally do. It could be, you know, a new food experience. It could be, you know, whatever. I just learned I'm 45 minutes from a ski resort. You know, here in North Las Vegas, we have Mount Charleston, and evidently they've got skiing. So I've never tried snowboarding. I know how to downhill ski, but I'm going to take my family out this winter, and we're going to try that. That'll be a new experience for all of us. And, you know, every month, just try something new. Keep it fresh. Keep you in the place of having some new story to say about something you tried that just tested you and just created a great story. But you have to create it. You got to plan it. You got to actually be out there living life to every day feel like you're fully alive. Wisdom is a great topic. And again, if you're down looking at your eulogy and say, you know, this person really gave to me at the right moment, had something to say that changed my life, that contributed to me in some way, you have to put that in you first. So let's talk about that a little bit. Personal development has to do with spiritual, in terms of prayer, meditation, scripture. This is something I tell people, you know, when, hang on a second. I've had several guys help them get started in a Bible, and I tell them where you start isn't, you know, at the beginning in Genesis. You know, I say the best place to start is Solomon, who's supposedly the wisest man in the world, whoever lived, wrote these, a thing called Proverbs. And in it is just common, it's just common sense sayings. You know, these, you know, from the wisest guy on the planet, talking about daily life, social interaction, life within a city, how you handle people in authority, all the things you do. It just, each day there's like a chapter, it's only like 15 lines or stanzas. It takes all of 5 minutes at most to read it. But it just puts something in there. I tell them just by whatever you read or put into yourself, you'll find how that comes back to serve you in the weeks ahead. So when you're with that guy who's just really stressed or hung out or whatever, all of a sudden you can say something deep and profound. Why? Because you put it in there and something comes out. meditation can mean a number of things for people. I know some people talk about just simply getting quiet, letting your mind be quiet. Others talk about focusing on a thought or these kind of things. And prayer is an interesting concept because obviously, in my belief, it's a connection with a God who I believe wants to connect with me and hearing what he has to say about what's going on in life and give me some heads up on things or some good words. But there's a humility that comes in that too, to realize we're not everything. You know what I mean? We're not. And we're not. So it's a great, great place to be. And also to realize we're also not alone. There's a place of deeper wisdom and help in this world that when we need it, that you know, we're not all stuck on our own. So aside from that, your mental personal development has to do with books, audiobooks, conferences. Just keep doing those. Keep doing them. I want to let you know, I was very pleased to renew and get back on with, I had a membership with audiobooks. I've had it since 2000. I have a library of over 100 audiobooks that I've licensed and bought over all these years. And so now I'm on a course where for this year, every week I'm going to do another book. Well, I can do that now with an audio program in conjunction with my workout. But it's by putting that in that I have stuff to give to you guys. Conferences. I love conferences because the energy, the vibe comes out of that lasts with you. And they'll talk about how at a conference that people won't, you know, remember everything. I say, who cares? It's what you get by being around a bunch of other people who are hungry, who are focused, who are passionate, who have an energy for your life, and you feel associated with that. You said, you know what? I relate to these guys. I'm one of these. I'm hungry. I have a zeal. I have a passion for life. And it's you need that association with people who are like that kind of energy. And this is why once a year, I believe we do our Christmas reunion for Dream Connections. You know, because not only during the week can you on Monday nights on Tribe Talk interact with guys in the tribe, but to see each other once a year, you know, that once a year thing is going to grow into a conference-like experience because I really believe it's the mental juice of life that keeps us fired up with learning new things, challenging ideas, things that other people are doing, and the energy that they have keeps us mentally sharp and growing. Our skill sets, training and practice for what we want to do in life. And mentors are a big part of that in many ways, because not only do you learn the skills that they have, they've done what you want to do, but you learn the mindsets and you become like those you hang out with. Socially, be well-read. You know, what's going on a little bit in the world, learn to interact, get out of your own head, pay attention to what others are saying, you know, to absorb their opinions, to absorb what's happening in conversations in the world around you. That's what keeps you fresh, you know, is when, you know, not only that you can just, you know, expound onto others all of your great learning and knowledge upon them. No. The greatest social people in the world are those who listen and absorb with fascination. And that makes you a broader, richer person. And for that, you'll be surprised that the gift you give by focusing and paying attention to a person and letting them just talk and feel like they were heard is the greatest gift you can give. And you may not have said four sentences in a half hour, but you watch the way you gave to somebody something deep, rewarding, and satisfying. And you know what that does for you? It gives you that feeling we're talking about. At the end of the day, you know what? Today was an awesome day. I feel fully alive. It's a rich, satisfying feeling. I gave and contributed to somebody else. And I learned a lot about where the people's headsets are, what we can do. People are out of their perspective. You can just help them, give them a little perspective with love, what's the best interest for them. You become a better person every time you do that. And that contributes to your daily experience of being fully alive. Now, teaching is another thing I really encourage. If there's anything you really love to do, find somebody else to show it to demonstrate it to. It may not be in a formal teaching like I do here, but they've always said that the way to learn anything is to teach it. Why? Because then you have to know it enough to tell somebody else about it. So they say, anything you're trying to learn in life, find one person where once a week you can say, hey, can you give me 20 minutes? I just want to tell you what I'm learning and see if this makes sense to you. Because in the process of you doing that, you really, truly learn that material. So it may take just a little bit more, but whatever you're trying to learn right now, just find somebody else that you can, if they don't want to learn it and teach it to them, find a good friend who will listen and say, hey, would you mind if I just told you what I'm learning because it helps me? And your friend will be fascinated, and it'll be something that'll make permanent the things you're trying to learn right now. And give advice sparingly, and only when asked. Treat it as a rare gift. Treat it as something very rare. the guru actually will come out of his place of quiet to deliver wisdom at the right moment. And I think too many times as men, we're problem fixers. And so we're too quick to jump in and try to tell somebody what to do and what our opinion is. Then we feel, wow, you know, I gave somebody, you know, my best and this kind of thing. And really, really turn, if you want to become that wise person, treat your words of wisdom like gold and deliver them at the right moment when it's actually going to be helpful, when you fully understand where the other person's at and when they're really asking you for it. Other than that, be that listening person where you're social, giving. You're just giving by listening and being there supportive. And I think that's great wisdom. Leaving a legacy is something that was always mysterious to me. It was vague. It's like, what does this mean? I want to leave a legacy. Getting that to be something concrete was weird. I remember they were talking about Bill Clinton scrambling the last 6 months of his pregnancy, presidency, to try to leave a legacy. I go, what would that mean? What is, you know, I don't get it. Why? Who cares? How did he not leave a legacy? He was a president, you know, whatever. And the more I broke it down, I've studied a lot more on the topic. I've heard others talk on it. And so I want to share with you some very concrete ways to say what this really means. So here we go. Here's some examples of legacy contribution. First of all, things you could pass on to your kids. And whether that's the following, you know, whether it's wealth or a business you created, you pass on to them, they can then run when you're gone. Or it's simply fame. You developed a reputation as, you know, being this person in the community, and they go, oh, you're so-and-so's kid. You know, he really did that. And so by doing that, your kids are blessed because there's this circle of influence that once you're gone will continue to support them. And hopefully, you know, they then have to take it and make it their own and do something with it. But you give them a leg up, you know, whether it's with some money or with a business they can run or simply a good reputation in town, like a guy who's the mayor. Maybe didn't get rich from being the mayor, but he was loved. And because of that, there's so many people who will do favors for your kids and try to help them out. That's a very solid example of what a legacy could be. A legacy could be books, it could be music, it could be movies. And by that, I mean if, like for instance, I wrote a book, and my book could be being bought and sold and changing somebody's life long after I'm gone. Somebody writes music. I mean, I still love the music of Michael Jackson. I love, you know, the Beatles movie music is still the greatest library there is. You know, movies that were done, you know, Wizard of Oz, you know, Casablanca, things that were done by people who are long gone, you know, are still making an emotional impact and touching people's lives today. And so that's a way to leave a legacy. Again, it's something that you can really make a difference and touch somebody's life, make an emotional impact on them, deliver something of great wisdom or thought or education after you're gone. Things that you created that others can experience after you're gone, basically. Charitable endeavors, and again, I've talked about these before, and it doesn't have to be just creating a nonprofit like I did. But people simply who got a second chance in life because of you. Maybe you gave somebody a break. Maybe you helped them out at the right moment. And they would later say, you know what? I would be, and a lot of people say, I was on a path to kill myself with drugs and somebody came along and just intervened. You know, or I had no idea what to do. I was lost. I was stuck down here and somebody came along and gave me this little nugget at the right period of time and or helped me set me up in a job and helped me do that. And it's all because of you. And now somebody's life carries on and changes and what it does for their kids and future generations because you touched them. And I think about some of the guys in the tribe that I love. You look at, you know, those under the testimonials page who went ahead and, you know, took the courage to go ahead and put a video and tell their story of what they did. And there are so many guys who went on a quest tour and says, I'm there because of that roundtable discussion when Todd was there. I'm there because Jeremy and Gallo were willing to tell their story. And it gave me the belief to say this could be for me. And because of Todd, because of Jeremy and Gallo, you know, there are marriages or be future children and grandchildren that all happened because they were willing to do that. They touched somebody's life and made a permanent impact in a very positive way. Charitable cause that you created after your passing. Now, this is something I did do. I created Abundance International, and you could do that. You could actually start a work that continues. whether you formalize it or simply created a, you know, a little department in your community government or at your church that does a good work that wasn't being done before, but will continue forever because you started it. Giving your time and energy is something larger to something larger than yourself, you can't be undersold. This is something where people do volunteer time. They go out, and I remember, doing the thing at Thanksgiving's, giving the turkeys, you know, in the meals, in the really some of the ghetto areas in the inner cities where I lived at one time, and realizing that those kind of things make an impact to somebody. And any one of these things, you touch any one of these things, and you come home that day feeling fully alive. You did something, and it's richly rewarding and satisfying. So what's standing in our way of doing these kind of things that really just make us feel so richly rewarded and satisfied, excited about what we're doing, that we're touching others, we feel interconnected with people, and we just feel like that we have this day that's fully alive. And let's talk about them. First of all, we're just unclear about our purpose and plan for life, and in that, it gives us a lack of drive. You know, I've heard this said, and I've said it to my son and others and my kids many times. It's like, you know, boredom is just lack of something that gets you excited. I mean, if you don't have anything enough to get you excited to get up and passionate about, it leads to boredom. I don't have anything to do right now. And so because I'm unclear about what I'm supposed to do next or what I'm just paying the bills, the worst is that feeling of being trapped, that being in that rut, that groove. You can't get out of that groove, and it gets deeper all the time till it's a trench. And you can't get out of that thing where I just get up in the morning to go to work, to get enough money to pay the bills, to go home to sleep in the house that I just paid for, and you never end this cycle. And you know, is this really what I'm here supposed to do, just to pay money so, you know, landlord somewhere can get a check? And it's that lack of understanding what you're supposed to do, what you're about. And so go back a little bit, listen to that first presentation, because I think it'll help you discover a little bit of that assessment to what can I do to make this an absolutely awesome second half in life. But if you don't know where you're going or things to get excited about, you know, again, it's like the scripture says, without vision, without hope, the people just perish. You know, they give up. And in fact, in the book, it's not called The Meaning of Life. Come on, what's it called? Viktor Frankl did, it's not The Meaning of Life, but it's something close to that. I'm sorry, I know this, and it slipped because it came to my mind right now. But he talked about the World War II prison camps and the ones that made it through, that kept fighting the physical struggle and the oppression and the physical abuse there was in a Nazi prison camp in World War II, which ones made it? And he said it was those that had something to live for. And it could have been just a girl back home. They knew she was there. They were going to have a life together. It could be a guy who says, I've got this dream. I have to go get it. It's this business I'm going to do, whatever I'm going to do. The guys who had something to live for are the ones who made it through the obstacles to live. And the others gave up very quickly and easily. So you can see how this can be a life and death thing for you too. But on a daily basis, it just adds up to boredom. It just gets in our way of having a fully alive day today. Distractions and time wasters. I want to give you some, I didn't detail that. I'm going to get into more actually in a second. But distractions and time wasters are, you know, can be any number of things. So I'm going to go more into that in a minute here. Other people's agendas. I'm going to also talk about that in a minute. A false sense of accomplishment really kind of ties into all of this, though. And this is where I want to get into. Distractions and time wasters and other people's agendas both can fit under this category of email. And if you haven't heard this said before, Brendan Burchard will say email is a nice, organized way to collect other people's agendas for you. You know, because it's other people sending you an email saying, hey, I need this from you. Hey, I need this from you. Hey, I have a problem. Can you give me this? And we don't take the time to think, well, does doing this right now serve me? Is it on what I need to get done today to make a fully alive day? We just go, oh, an email. I better respond to it. I better give this guy what he wants. And then we get this false sense of accomplishment. We'll spend 3 hours going like, oh, I got through that. I checked off all those emails. Well, all you did was you help other people get what they need done. What do you need done? And so the internet can be the same way. We can spend, on average today, I've heard varying numbers from 3.5 to 5 hours a day the average person spent on the internet. And of that time, you know, well over 80% of it is just non-essential, that had no value to anything we're doing in life or work-related or anything else. And, you know, it's okay to have some things for yourself that are rewards, relaxation, if it's all planned, if it's part of your way to enjoy a fully alive day. But many times you'll go there and you go, 2 hours have gone? Wow, did 2 hours go by? You know, because one link led to another link, and then this random thought, and we're ADD, and we're like, oh, and this, and pretty soon we're on the 12th web page, and you're going, why did I get on the computer again? I completely forgot. And we lack the focus. So here's, I'm going to give you a little tip here before I get to the end tips, but one of them is every day find a focus hour. And a focus hour is one where you literally turn this sucker off, put it on airplane mode, lock the door, let people know you can't be disturbed, to get one thing done and hammer it out with clear focus. No other websites, nothing else. Don't even have the computer on unless it's part of what you're trying to accomplish. And if you can learn to have focus time, it'll help create a discipline in your life, so then it becomes pretty obvious when other things are now wasting your time, because you know what it's like to be focused again. Some of us need to learn what it's like to be focused again. Video games can be that way for some people, and I love it, because there's a sense in video games where you go through a level and you knock something down and you high-five each other and you feel this great sense of accomplishment. And my son will talk about things where there are different missions and things where you can only do with groups of 5 or 6 people, and it's very difficult, and very few have actually done them, and he looks forward to doing these things. And if he got it done, I'm telling you, he would feel like he conquered the hill. But at the end of the day, what does it do for your life? You know, and I'm not saying don't do them. I love video games. I do it as a social thing. Buddies come over. I do it with my son as something, as we partner together, teamwork thing. You know, I don't play video games sitting alone by myself very much. But if I did, it'd be because this is what I want to do right now, and it would be intentional. And that's my point. Hobbies that are rewarding but have no end game. There are people who make their hobbies an addiction. And I know of one, and I'll use this one because it probably doesn't apply to anybody, and you'll just see if, do the work inside yourself to see if any of this relates to you or not. But his thing was cycling, and he was so obsessed on cycling that it was competitive. He would love to rub it in the face of other guys who couldn't make the 100 miles or who struggled going up the hills, and his time was being taken more and more away from family. And it became a real obsession, and it isolated him from social connections because the way he was with it, so competitive with it. Obviously, it was a family problem because, you know, he just wasn't home. And so you have to look at, is there really an end game to your hobby? You know, and it's your mindset around it. Look at the value. And again, biofeedback. You know, is it rewarding and fulfilling, you know, or is it giving you a sense of disconnection from people? So how do we make this happen? This fully alive day, we're just like, I love it. I crushed it today. And we love our life, you know, and it's so many times you just have that phrase of saying, I just love my life. You know, if you're not saying that, how can we help make this happen? Here's a few things. Begin the big day. Begin it big. Begin your day big. And by that, I mean this. Focus on the big picture regarding your accomplishments, your love and friendships, your adventures, your wisdom, your legacy contributions. You know, and if you had a piece of paper and you're feeling some sense of accountability for yourself, because what gets measured gets done. If you wanted to measure, are any of these 5 things I can touch on today? So at the end of today, I'm going to feel a deep sense of satisfaction that today was a great day. Just simply having the thought gives you much greater chance of it actually happening than just randomly stumbling into your day. List the big things you need to get done. And there's sometimes, every day, there seems to be one big thing. They always say, if you take the big thing off the list first, you will feel that sense of accomplishment. So with that, focusing on those 5 things, and not only is that going to create the future you're looking for, because you're focusing on 5 things that people will be talking about you at your eulogy, but they will bring you to life every day, and then they'll help create the future you're looking for, which we'll talk about next time. So for that, thanks for listening to Mark Edward Davis here, Power Planning for an Awesome Future. fully alive today. And I hope this is really helpful to you. Thanks for listening.